From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. So I think it's fair to say that sometimes we all need a little bit of advice, maybe some guidance in our lives. New York Times bestselling author Kevin Kelly has written a new book that does just that. It's called Excellent Advice for Living, Wisdom I Wish I'd Known Earlier. Kevin, I want to welcome you to the program.
Oh, it's such a delight to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I have to say, this book was so simple to read because it is literally just small pieces of advice and wisdom. But how did this book come to be?
Yeah, it's a curious book because I mostly write about technology, and I often make really big, long books. And this is a little book of little sentences. But it is a little bit more reflective of my own writing style, which is more telegraphic and compact. And I think it kind of suits the attention span of today, these little kind of short one sentence books in themselves. And so that was my intention, was to write down entire books of advice and to compress them into a little zip file of one sentence that my adult children would be able to pay attention to, would be able to, you know, memorize or learn or remember. They're kind of like reminders. So I was been writing down these reminders for myself originally, and then I thought, you know, I really wish I'd known this earlier. Oh, wait, I've never told these to my kids. Maybe I should write them down for them. And so that's what I did. I wrote them down for them, posted a couple on a birthday. They went viral. And then I did it for several years afterwards and put them into a book, because who can go back to the internet and find anything? And so they're all together in something that's a little easy to hand to somebody and say, hey, you're not going to listen to me. I'm your parent, but you'll listen to this guy, right?
Well, and I love that you wrote this, you know, originally for your young adult children, right? And to give them these pieces of wisdom, because we're not going to be here forever. And I, you know, sometimes I think we want to carry something forward. So were you thinking about that when you started kind of just writing these little pieces of advice?
I actually honestly didn't think of that, but that's a really good idea as well. It was more like we're not parents that gave a lot of very specific advice. Our parenting mode was to try to model the behavior. And so when I gave the kids the book, the final book, and I said, you know, here's what it is. And they said, what do you think? And they said, I don't think we ever heard you say very much of this, but you did teach it to us. And it's actually really good that you wrote it down, because now it's easier to remember.
And so, I love that.
Yeah. So I think that kind of worked. That's what it's meant there to be. It's a lot of the advice I'm kind of channeling the ancients, you know, the Bible, you know, Stoics from Greece, the Confucius scholars from China. It's kind of wisdom that many people have been recommending and advising forever. But there's a lot of other advice that is kind of new of, you know, for today that maybe was never said before. And so I kind of took all that and tried to put it into my own words and make it into something that could be reminded easily.
So let's dig into some of the advice that you give, one part that really struck me is you say, you'll learn a lot more if you ask people, how are you sleeping, instead of how are you doing?
Right.
And I read that, Kevin, and I was like, oh, that's really true. Because when you ask them how you're doing, it's usually fine.
Fine.
But how are you sleeping?
It's like, oh, I have my business is not doing so well. And I'm really, exactly. You start to hear things that are more honest in a certain sense. Yeah.
Okay. But then you give but what I like about this is you really do give these pieces of wisdom that are serious, right? But then you say things like, if you think you saw a mouse, you did. And if there is one, there are more.
Yes.
And I was like, that he's not wrong.
All right. I'm not wrong, because that is born, unfortunately, of my great experience with having mice in a house. And so we don't have cats. I asked a lot of friends, what do you do by in the countryside? What do you do about mice? They said, oh, cats. Oh, I get it. So, So there are other, yeah, there are other things that are kind of like, this is my magazine editor at work here is kind of put together like a magazine. They're not categorized. They're kind of serendipitously in not in in a special order that's not evident. And I tried to shift the sober, serious with a little bit more lighthearted. And that's like you would read a magazine, you kind of like turn a page and you don't know what to expect on the next page.
So, one part that one piece of advice I loved as well, as you said, anything you say before the word but does not count. Okay, I laughed out loud at this because when my husband and I were dating, he would always, like, if he needed to apologize, he would start to, and he goes, "But in my defense," and then he'd go on. And I finally said to him one day, I go, "No, just apologize and then be quiet. Just stop right there. Don't put the but in there. Just stop."
And I think actually somewhere I say as a bit of advice is don't ruin an apology with an excuse.
Right.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
Don't ruin
Exactly.
the apology with an excuse. So,
And then you have another piece of advice where you say, whenever there is an argument between two sides, find the third side.
oh
Okay.
yeah.
Okay, we need to dig into this because I
Oh,
have
yeah.
two kids, and trust me, they one of them, I mean, they fight. I think sometimes it's their love language, but it is, they have a side, they each have their own side, and then they want me to take a side. They don't want me to have a third side. They want me to take one of their sides.
Right. Well, the way you get out of it is you take a third side, is you so it's like oftentimes people cast things as a dichotomy between two things, and there's usually always some third option that just doesn't come up. I mean, even like there's even trivial things. I have to say this very carefully, but for a long time there were kind of race relations in the US between blacks and whites, but then there was like, okay, what about the Asians? And now suddenly, oh, that kind of like changes the whole equation. There's now something there. There's it kind of like it offsets that kind of like win-lose that you have between two sides. If you have a third side, you now have a triangle and it's a little bit more stable and less likely to have to veer into one side or the other.
Yeah. Another thing that struck me is when you said, don't aim to have others like you, aim to have them respect you. This is something that I have lived a lot of my life by. And I say to people, I'm like, I don't care if you like me. I don't care. I say this to my children all of the time. It's not my job for you to like me, right? But you will
Respect.
respect me. But I think we think about that when we're parenting. Right, kind of that adult to child relationship. But in your experience, has it related to other people in your life, not
Oh.
just, raising your kids and like, look, I'm your parent, you need to respect me,
Yeah.
not like me.
Well, yeah, actually, I mean, I have another piece of advice saying, it's to have 12 people love you or and respect you is much better than having 12 million people like you. So likes, I almost think it's in kind of the reverse. It's like we're not obligated to like everybody. We can actually dislike people, but we're obligated to respect them. And so if you can respect someone you don't like, then you can learn from them. Then you can actually get something from them if they have, and everybody has something worth sharing to others. And so the way to overcome the fact that you don't like them is to respect them. And that is, I found very, very useful in, dealing with people that I don't like. And you have views that I disagree with, and that is you if you res continue to respect them, then actually you can get something from them.
Yeah. And another thing re relating to that is this piece of advice that you say, don't ever work for someone you don't want to become.
And that is really true. I was just talking about that with my son who's applying for work right now. Two things: don't just take the job that pays the most money, and don't work for someone you don't want to become, because you will tend to become. We're all becoming something, and we need other people around us to help become the people we want to become. If someone is something, you don't work to acquire things, you work to become something. So we want to be going in the right direction, and it's really hard if you're surrounded by people that are taking you in the opposite direction. And I don't mean like good and bad. I mean you want to be headed in the direction of the only of you, of your true authentic self, what you can do that other people can't. And if you're going into the model of becoming someone else's idea of success, a famous or the best golfer in the world, whatever, that's a very limited. There's only one person that could be the best. And so that's what I meant by in the wrong direction. It's not necessarily like they're bad or evil. It's just that they're not, it's not the best for you. Your path should go head towards something where you are kind of inventing a new definition of success.
You know, it's interesting. Throughout my career as a journalist, when I would be interviewed, you know, for job possibilities, a lot of times, you know, I would get the question, well, who do you emulate yourself after? You know, what television news journalist do you try to be like? And numerous times, and I was very young when I first got that question, and I was like, nobody. I mean,
Me.
I like, certain things about certain journalists, but I can't be them. So why would I try to be them? And right, and I think that we, especially within our society right now, it seems like, this is, you have to be A or B or this or that, right? And who are you going to copy? And as my dad always said to us, it's like, look, there's only one of you, right? So there's only one of you, and so find what that purpose is. And so I love that when you say in the book, don't be the best, be the only.
And that's easy to say and incredibly difficult to do. It's a very, very, very high bar, because most of us who are normal, like myself, don't know when we're young what it is that we're good at or better than other people, or even that what we like, or even what our passion is. We just don't know. And so it can be very paralyzing in the beginning if you're given the assignment to follow your passions. It's like, I don't have any passions, is what most young people will say, including myself. And so it will take some time to go there, and it's not actually anywhere that you end up. There's no destination there. There's no final arrival. It's a direction that you're heading in. That's all that you get. You get to head in that direction over time. And so it's a long, lifelong journey of keep moving in that general direction, hoping that you're getting closer to that. And you need everybody around you to do it. It's like, the weird thing is that you can't truly become yourself by yourself. It takes an entire everybody else in the world to help you be unique. That's like a paradox, right? It takes everybody else to make you unique. What? So you're kind of doing it with everyone else's help to help you become that person. So you're becoming all the time, and you want to be careful about who you become around.
Before we wrap up, I loved this one, and you said, "See that old person taking forever in line? That is the future you. Have patience."
That I'm
Yeah,
talking to
and
myself.
I
I'm talking to myself there.
And I think too, it kind of goes the other way, right? Like I was just at the store the other day, and there was a young mom, and I went in to use the restroom, and she's got a baby, and then she's got a toddler who's like, running around in the restroom, touching everything, and just, wreaking havoc, right? And so I use the restroom, wash my hands, go out. She's out there trying to get him in the stroller and the whole thing, and she's blocking the hall, and she's like, "I'm so sorry." And I was like, "Oh, not a problem at all. Like I've been
You've
there,
been
right?"
there.
And I And so it's also the same thing too about have patience if you see like the younger you as well.
That's true. But I am very impatient in waiting in lines and stuff. So I tell myself this is me talking to myself. I got to be reminded, because it's like, you've been waiting in line, and now you're going to look in your purse at the very moment that they're waiting for. How come you didn't do it beforehand? Anyway, I get all upset by that, but I tell myself, nope, that's me. Gotta be patient. Take it easy. That's you in the future.
Yeah, it is such great advice. Thank you so much for the conversation today. Really appreciated it.
It was my pleasure so much. I love your spirit. Thanks for your great questions. And it was a joy to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much. Pleasure was all mine. We've been talking with New York Times bestselling author Kevin Kelly. He's written a brand new book. It's called Excellent Advice for Living: Wisdom I Wish I'd Known Earlier. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.